Okay, oh my God. You know, I have the great luxury of never having grown up in another teaching. So I've never had to be anti anything. I never had to unlearn things, which not that you do, but I hear that from you. I hear that from students and congregants, you know, pains and stories and, you know, things that you went through from different, your religious background, not everybody, you know, but it's so lovely that I don't have that. So I have just been able to grab hold of things that just feel lovely to me. And it doesn't matter to me whether they're totally new thought or whether it's an old, you know, old traditional song. I can remember growing up having not had any religious training really to speak about, and I didn't understand the whole, you know, the whole prayerful hands thing, you know. So initially that didn't happen to me, but then all of a sudden in my life, what happened was, I found myself sometimes in spiritual mind treatment, okay, prayer, same thing, and all of a sudden I found my hands coming together, and I started to recognize that it was an energetic thing, and for me it was cause and effect. It was the two parts. It was my heart and my mind coming together. It was all that. It just represented energetically getting focused and bringing the two sides of the creative process together in my heart. And so it's so lovely that I get to reap the benefits of, whether on some Sundays, although we haven't done any Sanskrit chants in a while, I can do anything from a Sanskrit chant to a Baptist or traditional Baptist song and love all of it. Which is so great when you don't have, when you don't object to something, the world is your oyster. See, that's the key. You have to choose not to object. You get that? So if you don't stand against something, everything becomes a possibility. You know, you can go and you, and if you're doing your work, and I mean your inner work, you can go to any church and take from it a beautiful experience, you know, because you know that you are the presence and you're the one. So that does not even have anything to do with my talk. It's just inspired from hearing that song, which is always one of my favorites. So I'm in the airport. I was in the airport in LAX a couple of months back, and I need no extra books. And I have Reverend Joel here totally supplying me like a drug addict, providing new titles, new things for me to purchase all the time. And so I try not to buy them outside, because if I want to buy them anywhere, I want to buy them here to support my own bookstore. So I saw the title of this book, and Bill, I think you were correct. I think I did change the name. I think that was the name of the talk, but I changed this because this is the name of the book. And this is a book by John C. Maxwell. Have any of you heard of him? John C. Maxwell? Okay, so I've done a number of his books when I was in ministerial training. And he does leadership training, and he's of a Christian background. The thing I didn't appreciate about him then was that he uses a lot of sports metaphor, and I guess as a man, relating more to men. But then as I grew in my ministry, and I realized how important it was going to be for me to be able to speak girl language and man language. Like, I realized I was going to have to learn to be flexible, especially raising three sons. So I've come to be able to have lots of metaphor about sports and, you know, and I've used many, many different things. So this book is Sometimes You Win and Sometimes You Learn, which is why it was Win Sometimes, Learn Sometimes, because I didn't want to steal his title, but I forgot that. So, And I am here to say to you that if anyone has led you to believe that while being in this teaching you were not going to hit bumps in the road, they lied. They lied. It's not about not hitting the bumps. It's about hitting them and go, "Whee!" That's the thing. Whee! Oh, go for a ride. And having that attitude. Because what else are you going to do? So I was going to tell you the story before, but it's more, I was going to jump in on Tony's testimony, but this is more perfect now. So my life is good. I'm happy. Like, I'm a happy person 99.9% of the time. You know, it's pretty cool. Like, I think that's a pretty good percentage. I mostly walk around this life feeling happy, feeling safe, feeling loved, feeling, you know, just enjoying life. And then there are those moments. There's that, the wee moments. So now you'll know what that's code for. We'll have that as our language. And so I had a wee the other day. Seth and I were buying our Christmas tree. And so we're at Home Depot, and we come out to the car, and the car won't turn over. Wee! With a little damn it thrown in. I wasn't thrilled, I gotta be honest. It was cold. And I had not worn boots because I thought I was just running into Home Depot and running back out. So I'm in my cold car, in sneakers, and my feet are starting to get cold, and I have to call AAA. And I'm asking for a jump, but it wasn't just a jump. I discovered that my last battery I had put in was 4 years ago. They put it in last time I had a Wii. And so they came, and they're going to put in the battery. And so now I'm now buying a new battery on the spot. Now, a few days ago, when we had the first snowfall, God love my son, he has not driven yet in snow. He's 17. And he was given a car by his dad, and the car is... And so he's driving this thing, this like box on wheels. I could probably get him someplace safer on a scooter. But he's driving it, and he's going around this curve in my town, and there's some snow on the ground, and first snowfall, first accident. The accident was almost nothing. It was minimal. But he did spin his car around, hit the tire up against the curb, popped the tire. So I said, all right, okay, because it was snowing and he was in a dangerous place, I called the cop because I knew where he was. I wanted him protected. And I said, call AAA. It was snowing. You know, he had not changed a tire in that car yet. I said, don't take a chance of doing it first time. And I'm really glad I did that, especially since the tire was no good. The tire was popped and the spare was no good. Okay. So that was fun. And so now they're going to tow it, and I said, okay, you know, take it away. Let's get all new four tires. In the meantime, I knew my tires were bald, too, so I said, I'm going to get my tires. So I go, and I get all new tires on my car. This is good. And then they take his car away. They're waiting. They order his tires. And I'm home doing my abundance, my daily practice. And while I'm in meditation, which is part of the practice of the 40 days, I get a phone call from my nephew. Now, follow me with this, because this gets a little complicated. Bill, who is my ex-husband, his wife Marilyn's, okay, current wife, her father and mother just went into an assisted living home. They had two cars. They have a great Oldsmobile. Doesn't everybody over 70 have an Oldsmobile? I just love that. I love those cars. He had an Oldsmobile and he had a Cadillac. So they didn't need two cars, they barely need one, so they're selling it. Somehow my brother-in-law, who loves Cadillacs, finds out that they're selling the car. I have no idea how that happened. So he says, I want to buy the car. So he buys the Cadillac. Okay, we're at Thanksgiving, and John says, oh, did you hear about what I bought? And being the Jersey girl that I am, I busted his chops about it. I'm like, yeah, you boarded out from under me. I needed the new car and blah, blah, blah. And of course, I was teasing, totally teasing. But he remembered this, turned around, took his old Cadillac, because he always drives a Cadillac. He has a 98 CTS red Cadillac, put four new tires on it, fixed all the brakes, put new struts on it, and then gifted it to me. Isn't that cool? As I've said to Bill, the next car must be in this century. However, now the funny thing is, my son's car, the heat doesn't work. My car currently, the heat doesn't work. It's about to get fixed. And evidently, the heat wasn't working in the Cadillac either. So he's getting that fixed too. What's the chances of that? Point. The point is, the meditation brought to me something from the place I could never, ever, 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 ever had seen it coming. However, I knew I needed a new car or another car. I was open and I was available. But the other part of it was just putting one foot in front of the other, taking care of business, doing the right thing, and then allowing the organism of life to show up. See, that's the thing. It is an organism, and you and I do not have the sight. We have an inner sight that we can open more and more through our practices, but we don't have the human intelligence sight to see everything in all directions. So just when you think you know what to do, just when you think you know the answer, just when all that is so, you're probably not seeing the biggest picture. Do you understand? It is incredibly important for you to be willing to not know, so that in the moment of the we, right, you also immediately tap into that place within that says, something's possible here. We are always sitting on the precipice of possibility. Always. That is the magnificent truth about this teaching. We are always sitting there. So, I'm reading some things that I wrote and a treatment that I had written last year, and it was perfect for today. So I want to read you my own treatment, believe it or not. I am so clear that God loves all of me. I am willing to risk it all. I am willing to risk more love just to love. I'm willing to be wrong in order to find my rightness. I am willing to try and try again to find out how to do things better. I am willing to live life on the edge to find that place of creativity. Oh yes, I am willing to allow God to use me as a vessel for good and greater good. This attitude and consciousness lends itself to my growth, my abundance, and my success. I stand in the declaration that I am total, obvious, and measurable success. The center is a demonstration of total growth, hugely successful, and a magnet for money. This is all made possible because I am willing to take a risk. Feeling loved, guided, and informed, I release this word into law. And so it is. And so that word rings very true to me, especially today, especially in light of bringing you this subject. Sometimes you win and sometimes you learn. And I've said this many times before, one of the banners under which I've decided to have my ministry is that I reserve the right to be wrong. Why? Because I'm going to be wrong. I'm going to forget things. I will forget your name. I might forget your birthday. I might forget things. You might wonder, how could you possibly? We had this long conversation. I don't know. I forget things. Do you not forget things? So how do we decide what's forgivable of another human being and what's not? And then how do we decide where we are forgivable? What if everything was forgivable? So all of these things, depending upon your willingness to have that we experience or to be objectionable and to have it be painful, is dependent solely on your attitude. You decide. You decide every single moment that something happens to you. When your boss walks up to your desk and he or she has that face, you know that look that some people have? Maybe it's your husband, maybe it's your wife, maybe it's a client, because we all have different, you know, roles that we play. And that person standing before you, depending upon what you make of that face right there and then, will even influence the experience that you are about to have. John, in this book, talks about a time that he's from the Midwest, and you could tell by the story I'm about to tell. Someone gifted him a gun. Does that happen to anybody? Have you ever been given a gun as a gift? I thought that's so funny. See what I mean? He has these stories that are like I could not relate to when I was, you know, earlier reading him. But his wife, he travels a lot and his wife is alone. And so someone gifted him this pistol, I guess, and said, here, this is for her when you're not around. I thought to myself, really? However, he mistakenly, because he travels so much, he forgot to take it out of his bag. He's at the airport. He's about to go through security and remembers at that moment and says, "There's a gun in the bag." Now, John, being this great man that he is, and he's a wonderful man, mattered not. They took him away in cuffs. And so he goes on to tell what a lesson that was. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was arrested. Okay. Have you made those kind of mistakes? Maybe not like that. Have you not made mistakes? Are you not forgivable? Were your actions not worthy of being forgiven? I believe they are. So he learned a lot from that experience. You go into pain and suffering, or you take from the experience something that lifts you and informs you, but the difference is who you are, because you're standing in the middle of that decision. Do you understand? Everybody with me on this? He asks some great questions later on in the book. And I'm going to bring these out to you because it speaks to how you and I, how we commune. Sometimes when things are up in our lives, we commune with the person who will offer us the least positive support. Sometimes we commune because we know they will let us bitch, moan, and complain, and they're not going to call us on our stuff, right? Everybody has someone like that in your life? Come on, right? And then you have the people you know that if you talk to them, they're going to say, "Really? Do you really want to look at it that way?" And so depending on who you talk to, you will get feedback and support that is commensurate with that person, their habits, their spiritual habits, and their level of growth. So he asks here, what kind of counsel do you receive when you seek it from unproductive people? Now, I don't remember the whole story, but there was a conversation between, I think it was Anthony Robbins, oh dear, Reverend Joel, you might know the story, and I don't know if it was Wayne Dyer or who's the guy who got arrested for the whole Sweat Lodge thing? James. So I don't know who was speaking. I know it was Anthony Robbins and then some other person. And this other person said, "You know, I'm doing really well in my life. You know, I am. Things are working. Things are good. But how come your life is so much better?" And so what happened was Anthony Robbins acknowledged that the people he counsels with and the people that are in his mastermind and the people he goes to are people of high success. So just like birds of a feather, he hovers in a group that expects high possibility. Right? Understand? So you got to look at who you're talking to. Now, don't give up your friends because maybe they're not doing quite as well. But don't also share your greatest secrets or your wants, hopes, and dreams to someone who can't honor them and breathe life into them. You know? Because otherwise it falls on ears. And what happens is, whether it looks like it or not, sometimes it incites jealousy. It incites competitiveness, and then all of a sudden there's a negative energy that can pull you down, and you don't even see it coming. He says, what happens when you discuss your problems with someone incapable of contributing to the solution? Now, again, I'm sure sometimes you might feel like you need that. Hopefully you have cultivated in this community friends that you go to, and I know I'm real careful now. I don't say my stuff anywhere that is not going to be held high. What happens when you follow someone who isn't going anywhere? Isn't that a question? Great question. What happens when you follow someone who isn't going anywhere? Where do you end up when you ask directions from someone who is lost? More lost. So a couple of weeks ago, in addition to my multiple prayer partners that I have that I treat with, there's not a day of the week that goes by that I don't treat with somebody, sometimes more than once a day. And in addition to that, I have a mastermind group. My mastermind group currently is Joe Schneider and Bill Sarnowski. So about 3 weeks ago, and I'm going to tell you this without giving you the end thing, so I apologize, but you'll get the point. Joe asked me a question. He said, if you thought you couldn't fail, what would you want to do? What piece of your dream have you not looked at? And that question brought immediate tears to my eyes because I realized I've had a piece of my dream that's been hovering, that I've known about it, that has been there, but I didn't bring to the forefront of possibility. And so he asked me, and I shared, because as my prayer partners this time, or my mastermind partners, this time with them is sacred. So I shared what that was. Now, what's fascinating is that between that time, which is about 3 weeks ago, I guess, about 3 weeks ago, and now, everything has changed to where that dream is not anywhere buried in the back of my mind. To where that dream is now in the forefront of my mind. To where now I'm partnering with someone for that dream. To where it is being given a name. Where it is being given life. And now I find I've communicated with someone else who has a similar dream. So that which I had allowed to kind of hover in the cavern of my subconscious, because I just hadn't pulled it up to bring it into the light, has been brought into the light because of one great question. I almost lost that because it was buried under, I don't think I can do it. And because there are some places in my life where I have labeled myself a failure, I didn't want to bring out my dream and see it fail. You understand? All of your dreams, your hopes, your wants deserve to be brought into the light and to be brought to a sacred place. Next year, the theme for 2014, whoops, sorry, and you'll be the first to know it, the theme for all of next year is building your field of dreams. And so next year, I'm going to do everything I can to foster you getting into prayer partners, getting into mastermind partnerships, and to bringing your dreams alive and allowing yourself to just feel the fire of your desire. Because that's when you come really alive. Now, when you start moving up that road, sometimes there will be that thing. There'll be the woohoo, okay? When that happens, though, then you deal with that when it happens. But we are going to do everything we can next year to cultivate the conversation around here that says, I deserve my dreams. From Reverend Joel's workshops that he'll be teaching, to the material we have in the bookstore, to the classroom, everything is going to be here to support you touching your dreams. What dream have you not shared? What dream have you allowed to hide in the shadows of your mind? Do you have one? Now, don't say it out here loud yet, but find a sacred place to say it. And a good sacred place is with a practitioner. If you just want to give it life, it could be with a practitioner. We have no hospitality today, evidently, right? Okay, so I'm willing for a bit of time today to sit up here in a circle. If you all want to come up here, and we can create a sacred circle, it means no crosstalk, and I'm willing to be here to be a witness for you speaking your dream. Now, I know we weren't expecting to do that, but I want to serve that purpose, because ever since my good friend Joe asked me this question, and they both held this as high for me, the fire in my belly has been high. So I want to be that for you. And if you want to join me after service, we'll say goodbye to those of you who want to go, and we'll sit here. and you can speak your dream out loud. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. So, say this out loud after me, please. I have within me all the necessary know-how. Understanding, knowledge, wisdom, enthusiasm, and power required to succeed. That is your truth. That is your truth. So let's hold the hand of someone and secure this, if you will, please. So let us know together right now in this sacred moment that we are sitting on the precipice of possibility, and that we each choose brilliance, that we each choose possibility, that we each choose the yes that is hovering within our consciousness. For what I know is that even if the appearance says no, if the appearance in form does not look affirming, what I know is that there down below that form, the inner sight, the inner knowing, the inner wisdom, that's where truth resides. And in truth, all things are made possible. Because with God, Spirit, love, life, all things are made possible. So what I know is that right now, as we activate that and we simply allow ourselves to feel the fire of desire in the belly of our being, that everything comes rushing forth to feed it, to cultivate it, to allow it to be, and Spirit informs us. Spirit absolutely, absolutely guides and governs the opening of who we are to make room for this. Because as each one of us, as you say yes, you give license to someone else to say yes. Because more light is simply more light. Your light shining bright never dulls the light of another. It simply invites more light, more love, more brilliance, more possibility. Let us each be a point of light, a point of consciousness, a point of power. Accept it, allow it, celebrate it, and be in the most beautiful expression of us as individuals as we can be. I trust this word. I believe in how this word lives inside of each of us, and I allow it to be so. With abundant gratitude for the beauty of life, abundant gratitude for the woo, I say thank you, and I call it good, and I bless all of it. And so it is.
And so it is.
So we surrender to you our open mind, our open heart, and our blessings. We appreciate you, we love you, we honor you, and we accept your gifts with an open heart. I bless them, and I thank you. And so it is.
And so it is.